This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We've got another hour of old-time radio crime for you, beginning with Night Beat. We'll hear I Wish You Were Dead from May 22nd, 1950. After that, it's This Is Your FBI and The Carnival Killing, their story from May 10th, 1946.
This is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Stories begin in many different ways. This one began with a strange little man who claimed a most remarkable power. The power to kill with his mind.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
One of those lousy moods I had. Spring in the air, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and nothing ahead of me except another day's work. A broken leg and a month in bed. I should be so lucky. I started to walk down Michigan Boulevard. By the time I reached the art museum, I hated the whole world. Everybody was going home, and I was going to work. So, like a school kid playing hooky, I turned into a patch of grass landscaping the museum. And I sat down on a bench. The other end of the bench was a little old guy. He was thin as Melba toast, and he was staring at a pigeon perched on the fountain. I was beginning to feel persecuted, like I was the only one in the whole wide city who had to go to work. In a nice, lazy kind of way, I was beginning to wish I was...
dead. I wish you were dead.
At first, I didn't know where the voice came from. There was no one in back of me. There was no one around except the little guy at the other end of the bench.
There. I did it again.
You know, that's not a very nice thing to say to somebody you don't even know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't think you heard me.
Oh, certainly I heard you. Why would you wish a thing like that on me?
Oh, but I didn't mean you. Not at all. Because if I did, you would now be dead.
You mean I would be dead?
It's terrible. Just terrible.
Well, if it wasn't me you just said that to, then who was it?
The pigeon.
Pigeon?
The one that was on the fountain.
I see. And what happened to the pigeon?
He died.
The pigeon died?
Oh, yes. It'll happen every time. I'll get the bird and show you. Yes. It's dead, all right. You see? Perfectly dead.
Oh, now look, Mr.
Fettle is my name.
Yeah, Stone is mine. Randy Stone, and I guess I'll be running along.
Oh, I thought perhaps you could help me, Mr. Stone. You look like the kind of person who would understand.
Yeah. I'm a harmless type that's always walking into a confession.
Well, you see, it's something I can't tell to just anyone.
Yeah, well, some other time. I'll be seeing you.
Oh, that's the way it is. Everybody's interested in only themselves.
Well, get rid of that bird. It's not very pleasant sitting next to someone holding a dead thing in his hand.
Oh, of course. If I put it over there under the bush, would you listen to me? Maybe if I talked about it, it might help. You're not a policeman, are you?
No. I'm a newspaperman.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, get rid of the bird.
And then you'll listen to me?
Yeah, I'll listen.
Oh, that's very good of you, Mr. Stone. I'll just put it down over here.
He was a cute little old guy who didn't seem to fit into a world of aeroplanes and the Geiger count. He was still wearing a white celluloid collar and a tarnished diamond stick pin and a black tie. He was as clean as grandmother's old lace and just as faded. His white hair bulged from an old fedora hat and his eyebrows looked like the prank of a makeup artist. They were untouched by age and they were strawberry red. I was already feeling sorry for him and I knew if I could, I was going to help him. He put the bird under the bush, and then he looked down at it and sighed.
I didn't mean to do it.
Sure, I understand. Now, what's bothering you?
You see, I killed that bird simply by looking at it and saying that I wished it were dead.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. You wished it was dead, and it died.
You heard me, didn't you? You wouldn't think a thing like that was possible, would you?
Well, I don't know. If I remember correctly, there was this fellow King Midas. He had a pretty good thing, too. All he had to do was touch something and it turned into gold.
Oh, of course, that was only a fairy tale. You're not poking fun at me, Mr. Stone. You're not implying that I made this up?
Well, now, don't get touchy. It's pretty hard to get used to. All you have to do is wish a bird is dead and it dies.
Anything. A bird or even a person. And they die.
Well, that's quite a power you got.
You don't believe me, do you?
You ought to get a hold of yourself, don't you think?
I know I shouldn't have said anything at all.
All right. Now, let's say I believe you. What do you expect me to do?
I'm getting afraid of myself. I can become dangerous.
Well, don't wish those things and you won't be dangerous.
But if I ever hate like I once did, then I'm not responsible. The words would just come out. It would happen.
You mean you could wish I was dead or anybody and they'd die?
That's what I've been trying to tell you. I don't want to hurt anybody, Mr. Storm. You still don't believe me.
Oh, I think it's a perfectly wonderful story. Now I gotta go.
Oh, please don't go. Don't leave me, Mr. Storm, please.
Oh, take your hands off my coat. Do you mind? I want to go to work.
But listen, I killed a man.
Oh?
I killed Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown?
Arthur E. Brown, president of the Utilities Loan Company.
Uh-huh. You killed him.
I was the one.
It was the urgency and the way he wrung his hands together that got me. I felt pretty foolish sitting there on a park bench listening to the most fantastic kind of nonsense. For 40 years, he worked for this company. He never married. He lived a lonely life. The only pleasure he had was his job. But he was getting old. And then one day, it was on a Friday, he got his paycheck from the head bookkeeper.
Thank you.
This is a mistake, a terrible mistake, Miss Johnson. This check is too much.
Let me see. Oh, I don't think so, Mr. Fettle.
No, but that's 3 weeks' pay. 2 weeks more than I've got coming. It's not my vacation, you know. I always take mine in July.
Yes, I know, Mr. Fettle.
Well, then you better rectify it, Miss Johnson.
I'm sorry no one told you. On the back of the check, Mr. Fettle, that slip of paper.
Oh? You mean this?
Mm-hmm.
Why, that's a 2 weeks' notice. Oh, that's a terrible mistake.
I hope so, Mr. Fettle.
Oh, such a stupid thing. Imagine my being here so long. Why, everybody knows. I better see Smitty about this right away.
Smitty has been transferred to the Ohio branch.
Since when?
5 weeks ago, Mr. Fettle.
Oh, well, then I see the new fellow. I don't like to embarrass him, but I must bring this to his attention.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fettle.
But you don't understand. You're new here.
Yes, Mr. Fettle, but there's nothing I can do.
Well, I'll have to go to someone who can. Who is it that's over you?
Well, you might try one of the vice presidents.
Of course, Mr. Fettle, you realize I had no idea. Why don't you see the treasurer?
I'm really quite sorry, Mr. Fettle. But really, it's out of my hands.
I see. No one will take the responsibility. No one cares. Sending me from one to the other like I was some kind of thing being bodied about. I'm going to the president. I'll tell Mr. Brown.
Mr. Fettle went up another flight of stairs running, right through a whole pool of minor executives, straight into Mr. Brown's office. Brown was sitting there in an enormous leather chair, a very huge, fat man. His face was red and puffy. Instead of breathing, he seemed to gasp. He was that mad when Mr. Fettle walked in unannounced.
What are you doing in my office?
Mr. Brown, I just had to see you. There seems to be no one to take the responsibility for this. You see, I've been here so many years. They just don't seem to realize how long I've been here. I wanted you to straighten it out for me.
Get out of here!
But it's so unfair.
Get out! I said get out of here!
The hatred that had been piling up in Mr. Fettle had now found a target. He looked Brown squarely in the eyes and said it right to his face. Right out loud.
I wish you were dead.
You what?
I wish you were dead. He's dead. Somebody, quick! Mr. Brown is dead!
Mr.
to Nightbeat and Randy Stone.
Sure, we've all thought about the idea at some time or other in our lives. And we could look at another person and wish he were dead, and bingo, it would happen. But then we all grew up and we forgot about it. But here was this little old guy, Mr. Fettle, who not only believed this phenomenon about himself, but was determined to prove it to me. That's what I get for stopping on a park bench when I should have been on my way to the paper.
So you see, Mr. Stone, that's how it all started, that day in the office.
Well, don't worry about it, Mr. Fettle. Coincidence.
Oh, I wish you were right. But what about the flies?
I'll buy it. What about them?
I'd hold them in my hand and say it, and then they'd stop buzzing and keep real still. Dead.
Oh, you're taking yourself too seriously. Stop squeezing flies to death and stop telling yourself you're Superman.
But what about the bird? It was perched on the fountain. I wasn't even near him. And I looked at him, and I said it. And then, just like that, it fell to the ground. Dead.
Uh-huh. First it's Mr. Brown, then it's squeezing the flies, and finally the pigeon. Oh, go on home, Mr. Fettle. Go on home before I begin wishing you were dead.
I knew I shouldn't have told you. Now I don't know where to turn. I've got the strangest feeling, a terrible need to test everything, just to go around wishing things were dead. I'm sorry I took up your time, Mr. Stone.
What's that?
Hey,
Jerry! Wait a minute, Mr. Fettle. That
here.
Kid over there.
Hey, Jerry, over here! I found it!
Uh-huh. See that boy with the BB gun? See him?
How's that?
If I can prove you didn't kill that bird, will you go home and forget about the whole thing?
And those boys are... They're picking up the bird. They shouldn't do that.
Hey, kid.
What?
What are you doing with the BB gun?
Oh, nothing.
You shot that bird, didn't you?
It was an accident. Honest, mister, we didn't mean nothing.
Come here, now. Bring it over here.
Run, Jerry, run. He's going to get it.
Hey, come here. I'm not going to do anything. Come here. Well, they're gone, and they took the bird. But now you know, Mr. Fettle, it wasn't you. The kid did it with the BB gun, okay?
You mean they thought they did it?
I see. Okay, so you want to believe you did it. Makes you feel important, doesn't it?
Important?
Yeah, it gives you a feeling of power, doesn't it?
Oh, no, Mr. Stone. I feel like a murderer.
Well, if you feel that way, why don't you turn yourself into the police?
I've thought of that. But I'm not a stupid man. They'd either laugh at me or put me in an institution. And I'm not insane, Mr. Stone.
Yeah, well, I'd like to help you, but I don't know what I can do to convince you.
I can't sleep. I haven't eaten. And I'm in no condition to look for work.
Oh, look, Mr. Fettle, we're going to put a stop to this nonsense right now. It's getting late. I got to go to work. Before I go, I'm going to settle this once and for all.
Oh, anything you did, I'd appreciate.
All right. Now, here I am sitting right next to you, right?
Yes.
Now I'm standing up. See, I'm healthy. Nothing wrong with me, right?
Well, of course.
Now look at me.
I don't think I understand.
Just keep looking at me.
Well?
All right, go ahead now. Wish that I was dead.
Oh, but Mr. Stone, why should I do anything like that to you?
You want to be able to go home and get a good night's sleep? You want to be able to eat and start living like a human being again? All right, go ahead. Wish I was dead.
I won't do it. I won't.
Because you're a liar, aren't you?
But don't say that.
You're a liar, Mr. Fettle. You're a liar.
Keep away from me, please. I don't want anything to happen to you.
Anything to hang on to your little fantasy. Anything to sit here in the park and keep someone talking to you. You're lonely, Mr. Fettle, and you're a little bit nutty, if you ask me.
Don't make me do it, please, Mr. Stone. Don't get near me that way.
Then say it. I said say it. Despite myself, the sweat was beginning to bubble on my forehead. I could feel the back of my shirt getting wet. I could have kicked myself up and down State Street for being sucked into this old man's stupid little nightmare. But there I was, like a Madison Street mooch, insisting that the guy prove it. Not to himself anymore, but to me. Go ahead, Mr. Fettle, say it.
Please don't make me, Mr. Stone.
He cringed away from me now, and his back was pressing up against the tree, and I kept following him. As I got closer to him, he had no other place to run. And he stood there with the most peculiar expression in his eyes.
All right, Mr. Stone. But it's not my fault, understand? I don't want to do it, understand?
I understand. Now say it.
Please forgive me, Mr. Stone, but you're making me. Isn't that right? You're making me say it.
Well, say it and get it over with.
I wish... I wish you were... I can't. I just can't.
There's no use pretending I wasn't relieved. I felt both frightened and silly playing this little game.
I just couldn't do it to you, Mr. Stone. I'm not angry. I've gotten to know you and like you. It's become so personal. I wouldn't want anything to happen to you.
As he talked, his eyes became fixed on the building opposite the park. It was a tall building, and way up high, about the 18th story, there was a man up there washing windows.
You see that up there? You see him?
Oh, the window washer?
There's nothing personal about him, is there? Just a speck crawling on the side of a building watching windows.
You're going to start that all over again.
Well, there's nothing personal about that. That speck up there, is there?
Now, look, you're not going to drive me batty.
Well, if you'll only believe me, I'll try to show you.
You mean with the window washer?
He's pretty far away, and it's so impersonal, and, well, it may not work.
Of course it won't work. That's what I've been trying to tell you.
Well, I mean my not knowing him. Maybe I have to know the person or be real close. Maybe I have to have an argument with the person or not like him.
Yeah, like the pigeon.
Oh, well, that was different. I actually looked into the pigeon's eyes, and he looked at me. And that's when I said it.
Yeah. Oh, why don't you go home and go to bed? Read a good book. Forget about yourself.
You're going?
That's right.
Oh, wait. I'll do it.
I stood there watching him. He stared at the man on the 18th floor for a long time. As a man started to change his safety belt to move from one window ledge to the next, just as he took off one rope from the bolt on the window frame, Mr. Fettle started to whisper.
I wish you were dead.
It all happened in a split second. The moment he said it, the man on the window ledge lost his balance. First, the bucket came clattering to the ground. And then the man hung suspended, dangling by one rope and clawing at the air to get back on the ledge. And then the rope broke. And the man fell around. When it happened, I ran over to the building and got what few facts were available. The item appeared in a late edition, about 10 lines on page 8. Naturally, I said nothing of the little old man on the park bench, or they would have thought I was as insane as I felt the little guy to be. But I couldn't get the amazing Mr. Fettle out of my mind. When I started to feel that I, in some weird manner, were indirectly responsible for the window washer's death, then I knew I was involved up to my neck. I went downstairs to the newspaper library. I found the item I was looking for. Arthur E. Brown, president of the Utilities Loan Association, had succumbed to a heart attack and was pronounced dead upon the arrival of his personal physician, George Watkins. The first thing next morning, I went to see Dr. Watkins.
I'll be glad to give you whatever information you want, Mr. Stone, but I'm also rather curious as to your reasons.
Well, in a very general way, I'm interested in certain types of death.
Oh, coronary, heart fatalities?
You might call it that.
What is it you wanted to know?
Well, as I understand it, there was someone present in Mr. Brown's office at the time he died.
I believe so, one of his employees.
I'm wondering if this man could have in any way brought on the heart attack.
It's possible. But that particular day, not at all probable.
Why not?
Mr. Brown had complained of a severe constriction across the chest, and his secretary had already called me before that man was in his office. In fact, I was on my way over to his office before he succumbed. Mr. Brown's secretary was in the first aid room getting him some medicine.
You mean Brown was already dying before the man even got into the office?
Mr. Brown was already dying of the effects of an extraordinary lunch. With the kind of heart condition he had, his death was just as inevitable as tomorrow's sunrise.
It couldn't be any plainer than that. Coincidence number one had been taken care of quite neatly. But that window washer still had to be dealt with. For a man who'd been washing windows for so many years to slip off the windowsill and then for the rope to break right at the time my amazing Mr. Fettle wished he were dead. Well, that's a pretty touchy thing to reconcile the coincidence. I went back to the building and located the engineer who was in the basement replacing a steam valve on a hot water tank. At first, he wasn't very cooperative.
I suppose you're another insurance man who wants to know more about why we don't have safety measures for our window washers.
No. I just happened to be a newspaper man who was sitting in the park when it happened.
Well, if you saw it, you know more about it than I do.
He worked for you, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, what happened? Why should that man's rope break?
I'm tired of answering questions. That's all I've been doing is asking questions.
Well, look, mister, I'm not here to make trouble for you. I don't want to give you any bad publicity. I want to know why it happened, but Of course, if you don't want to tell me, then I've got to believe that the building was responsible.
If I warned him once, I warned him 100 times. His equipment was rotted through. I told him he couldn't go to work on my building unless he bought new ropes. He was pretty sore, but he went home. At least, I thought he went home. What happened was he got lost in one of the bars on Clark Street, and when he was good and drunk, he came back. Without me knowing that he went to work. He was drunk, that's what he was. It was nobody's fault but his own.
If it wasn't for the fact that somebody else had suffered, the whole thing would have been funny. It was the most ironic joke that coincidence could play. On a pathetic old man who thought he had some kind of strange power, and on me, a sucker for anybody's story if they insist they've got one. I got Mr. Fettle's address from Miss Johnson at the place he used to work and went over to see him. He lived in an old boarding house. His landlady was a nice old gray-haired woman that was as interested in knowing where he could be found as I was.
He hasn't been home since yesterday. And that's not like him. 15 years he's lived here. And he never spent a night away from home.
But does he have any relatives or friends that he could have gone to?
Not a soul, sir. The loneliest man I ever knew. But the nicest. Why, he just wouldn't hurt a soul.
Well, I've got to find him.
Oh, well, something's wrong, isn't there?
No. I've got a pretty important message for him, and it'll make things a lot easier on him when I tell him.
I see. Can't you tell me?
No, it's rather personal. Here's my number, though. You can reach me at the office. No matter what time he gets in, if you have any regard for him at all, please call me.
I certainly will, sir. And nobody has better regard for him than I have. You know, he's been getting awful thin lately. Yes, you'd think a man wouldn't starve himself just because he was out of work. Now, would you, sir?
Well, you call me. It'll be a lot different after I talk to him. I went to the office by way of Bughouse Square. I inquired here and there about an old gent with the white hair and the strawberry-colored eyebrows. They knew who he was, all right, but they hadn't seen him. I was getting worried about him. A nice little guy somewhere in the city running away from himself, thinking he was a dangerous killer. When I got to the office, there were no messages. I put my feet on the desk and I waited. Then I started to do my column with coincidence playing the villain. I got halfway through, put my feet back on the desk and dozed off. 2 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang. Yeah.
Mr. Stone?
Mm-hmm, speaking.
He just came in just now.
Who?
Mr. Fettel.
Oh, okay, thank you. I'm coming right over. When I got to the house, she was waiting and had the door open before I could ring the bell. Is he in bed?
No, Mr. Stone. He's sitting in his easy chair.
His room upstairs?
It's no use going up there, Mr. Stone.
Well, what's wrong?
Well, as soon as I called you, I put some soup on the stove. You see, I wanted him to have something hot to eat. I knocked on his door, but, well, he didn't answer. I opened it, and he was sitting in the easy chair. Before I got to him, his eyes went up at the ceiling. Then they closed, and his head rolled on his chest. He was dead.
Well, I can't understand it. He wasn't sick. He was unhappy, but he wasn't sick.
It doesn't make much difference now what he was. Poor soul.
That's all that happened? Just what you told me? He didn't say anything?
Well, he mumbled something, but it's not worth repeating.
What? I want to know.
Some sort of foolishness, Mr. Stone.
Well, tell me. I've got to know.
I'm sure I heard it wrong.
Well, what was it that he said?
Well, as his eyes were on the ceiling, it seemed to me... Now, sir, I can be wrong, you know, but it seemed to me that he said, "I wish I was dead."
Sitting on a park bench in the warm sun doesn't always lead to peace of mind. Not if you happen to be a harmless little guy who draws the ace of spades every time he makes a wish. Of course, we know that everything that happened was just coincidence. We all know things like this don't happen. You know, like the flying saucer. Copy, boy.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This is Your FBI. This is Your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. And now a special request to boys and girls. If your father and mother don't happen to be listening to This Is Your FBI tonight, please get them. Tell them that the Equitable Life Assurance Society, the sponsor of this program, is going to make an important announcement to homeowners and to all families that are thinking of buying or building a home. Tell mother and dad they're going to miss something if they don't get the facts on America's finest plan for home ownership. Tonight's FBI file, The Carnival Killing.
Day after day, the criminal goes on defying it. And as twice reflected in tonight's case from the files of your FBI, day after day he is caught up in its inevitability. The inevitability of that ancient truth which disciplines all human conduct, and from which there is no exemption. Be sure your sins will find you out. Our story tonight could take place in most any kind of setting you could name, and it could involve persons of most any rank or station in life. But it just so happens that this particular time, it actually took place in a carnival setting. That music, of course, is coming from a merry-go-round somewhere down the Midway, and the crowd just part of the Saturday afternoon throng. Over here to one side, the main money wagon. The attractive girl seated at the open window is the cashier. And the dapper young gent in the plaid suit and straw hat just walking up to her runs the concession just across the Midway.
Hi, babe.
Hi, Larry.
Well, how goes with the ump chase, huh?
Kind of slow.
Oh, yeah, I got the same complaint.
No biz?
Not enough. But here's 100 you can sort the way for us.
Hey, that ain't bad.
Well, if the suckers will start throwing hoops, I ought to take in another yard by shutdown.
Keep slugging then, Junior.
And pretty soon, babe, you get that ring.
You mean the big one? The one we seen in St. Louis?
Oh, are you kidding? That comes heavy, sweetie.
Well, it was your idea.
Okay. I'll keep slugging for it. Here, give me 4 rolls of quarters, huh?
Mm-hmm. Here you are.
See you later, babe.
So long, Larry. Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, we settled the intro real quick, didn't we?
Did we?
My name's Jack Crawford. What's yours?
People who know me call me Babe.
I'll buy that.
You don't know me.
I will.
Last operator.
How long you been waiting for that ring?
You were on the Erie.
That's right.
Why should the ring interest you?
With me, you could have had it by now.
Stop, will you?
I mean it.
Look, that ring has a marriage deal wrapped around it, mister. So, I guess the show is over.
Just the first act, babe.
What do you mean?
Here comes the second act now.
Oh, he's seen you talking to me.
What's wrong with that?
Larry don't like for me to fool around.
No kidding.
Okay, Mac, quit bothering to help and move along before I...
Before you what?
Just get moving, that's all.
You remember me now, don't you? Don't you?
What are you talking about?
Babe, it's an old saying. You can't fool all of the people all of the time. Not even with a mustache. Am I right, Mr. Hampton?
His name ain't Hampton, it's Marlin.
Back in Terre Haute, it was Hampton.
Larry, what's this all about?
Oh, he's got me mixed up, that's all.
Babe, tell the guy to quit covering, will you? It just so happens that your boyfriend here is a deserter from the Army.
What?
And on account of that, the FBI is looking for him, and...
That's enough.
I figured it would be.
Larry.
Now, as I was saying, back in Terre Haute, his name was Hampton. We were old pals back there, right, Larry? Well, even though he won't admit it, honey, we were. And because we were pals, I'm going to have to ask him for a little favor.
What do you want?
I got to get out of circulation for a while. And this looks like a good place to do it. So, I'm moving in with you.
Now, wait a minute.
And remember, before you make any beef, that I'm in a real good spot to blow a whistle. So, how about it?
Okay.
Well, that's the end of the second act. Third act coming up, babe.
A few miles away in the St. Louis office of the FBI, Agent in Charge Phillips has just summoned Special Agent Gaynor to his office.
You want to see me, Mr. Phillips?
Yes, Gaynor.
What's up?
Just got a follow-up on that Oklahoma bank robbery yesterday.
Really?
The agents down there caught two of the men early this morning.
Did they talk?
Yes. Here's the description of the third man, still at large.
Has it been checked with Washington?
That's Washington's check on it in your hand now. Just came in on the teletype.
Oh.
The man's name is Jack Crawford.
He's already served 2 years for robbery, too.
His home state is Indiana, and he just may be headed for there.
Which could bring him through Missouri and maybe even St. Louis. How is he traveling last?
In the car they used in the robbery. There's an alarm out on it now.
Well, he may abandon that soon.
If so, it'll make his trail that much hotter.
Well, are we getting a set of fingerprints and a photo on him?
In the morning, airmail.
Good.
You better contact police headquarters here right away and see that they're up to date on the case, and state police, too.
Right.
Just a minute.
How are you tonight, babe?
Hello there.
Got sick of hanging around Larry's trailer. Thought I'd come over and see yours.
Uh-huh.
You asking me in?
Okay, come ahead.
Thanks. Hey, it's real nice. All them curtains and stuff, just like home.
Thanks.
You, through work for the day?
No, I just got 2 hours off.
Well, I got 2 free hours myself. Mind if I sit down?
Go ahead.
Thanks.
Where's Larry?
Out clipping the suckers, I guess. You know, this county business is quite a touch. Imagine making a living out of people throwing hoops at little kids.
Does Larry know you came over here?
Why?
He ain't gonna like it.
That gonna bother you?
No.
Then, let's not worry about him.
Okay.
Tell me something, will you?
What?
It's ring business. You really going to marry the guy?
That's the general idea.
Why?
Why do most people get married?
Well, the book says love. You know, that moonlight and roses stuff. But, I don't seem to catch any of that going on with you.
You're doing an awful fast add-up, mister.
No. Just watching history repeat itself.
What do you mean?
I already told you I knew Larry back in Terre Haute.
So?
So I've seen him in action with other dames. He's one of them nice guy characters. You know, sweetheart, that's all right for squares, but it ain't for you. Am I right?
Want some coffee?
Am I right?
You're right.
You know what you really want? someone like me.
I'm going to make that coffee.
Wait a minute. Come in.
Well?
Now, look, sweetheart.
Who is it?
Me, Larry.
Oh.
Let him in.
But he...
Let him in.
Hiya, honey. I just got a minute and I thought I'd... What are you doing here, Jack?
Just dropped in.
Babe, has this guy been bothering you?
No. No, he just came here looking for you.
He knew where to find me. He came here to see you.
Look. Remember, I'm your guest. You forget it, you'll be Uncle Sam's guest, so just take it easy. See you later, babe.
Phillips speaking.
This is Gaynor, Mr. Phillips.
Oh, got a lead on Jack Crawford?
Yes, the police just found his car.
Where?
He drove it into a garage here in St. Louis yesterday morning early and apparently abandoned it.
That gives him over a 24-hour start on us.
I know.
Any new auto thefts reported?
No.
And start checking bus, railroad, and airline terminals and ticket offices. You've got his photo.
Yes.
If he didn't steal or buy transportation out of here, then he's somewhere in the vicinity.
I hope he is.
So do I. Keep in touch.
Right.
What is it, Larry?
I thought you were going to wait for me at the money wagon.
I didn't say I would.
But you always do.
Look, I've got to get back to the trailer.
Wait a minute, babe. Look, I got to talk to you.
Save it, will you, Larry? I'm tired.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, honey, I'm sorry about this afternoon. I didn't mean to blow my top. But that guy coming to see you, finding him there, I just couldn't take
you
it.
You told me all that. Good night, Larry.
Let me come in a minute, babe. I've got to talk this out with you.
It's been talked out.
Please, just for a minute.
Okay, come ahead. Don't forget this is getaway night. We've got a long trip ahead of us.
I know.
Will you turn on the light?
Yeah, sure. There we are.
Hiya, Larry.
Jack.
What are you doing here?
Waiting for babe.
What for?
Because I wanted to see it.
Look, you, get out of here. Get out quick.
Now, wait a minute. I think Babe should have something to say about that. You want me to go, hon?
Leave her out of this.
Look, please, don't start anything.
Yeah, the Army might not like it.
Jack, I got some news for you on that Army business. It isn't going to work anymore.
No?
No. You know why I deserted. You know I went over the hill because my mother was sick. And at the time, I didn't have guts enough to go back. But your moving in on me has changed my mind.
This hero talk is for your benefit, honey.
No. It's for something I found again after a long, long time. My self-respect.
Oh, this is great. Tell us more, Daddy.
I've finished. Now get out.
What for? You're going to turn yourself in. There's no need for me to get out. Ever.
What do you mean?
You tell him, babe.
No, Jack, please.
Okay, then I'll spill. It makes no difference to Babe whether you go through with this patriotic pitch or not.
What?
She's changed her mind, too.
Babe, what's he talking
about? Look, let's not argue anymore tonight, huh?
Honey, he might as well know.
Well?
She's found herself a real guy.
Why, you dirty...
Jack! Jack, darling, did he hurt you?
Yeah, he hurt me, but not as bad as this bottle will hurt him. Oh!
You hit him awful hard.
So what?
He's bleeding awful bad. Jack, I think he's dead.
And now, before the FBI file on the carnival killing resumes, as it will in just a moment, here's that important message for homeowners and home buyers. This week at the Equitable Life Assurance Society, I met a man with one of the biggest smiles I've ever seen in my life. Boy, do I feel good, he grinned, and he waved a paper at me. You see that, he said? That's the mortgage on my house. And today it's just a piece of paper. That mortgage is all paid off every last cent. I own my home free and clear, and nobody can take it away from me. Well, there's no question about it. One of the red-letter days in any man's life is the day he pays off his mortgage. And that's a day that's not too far off when you buy a house through the Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan. A plan which combines these five advantages. One, the mortgage is canceled, paid off in full if owner dies. Immediately, the widow owns her home free and clear. Two, a special cash fund is built up, and it's always ready to be used if financial emergencies threaten the home. Three, mortgage interest not at 6%, not at 5%, but at only 4%. Four, liberal allowance to cover title search, lawyer's fees, and other closing costs. No broker's commission or bonus charges. Five, one low monthly payment covers everything and provides free and clear ownership in the time you select. Well, frankly, there is no other plan like this anywhere. The Equitable Society calls it America's finest plan for home ownership. It protects you against the two major hazards of home mortgages, death and hard times. So if you're planning to buy or build a house, or if you now own a home, get complete information on the Assured Home Ownership Plan from your Equitable Society representative. That's the Equitable Society. EQUITABLE. The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. And now back to the FBI file, The Carnival Killing.
Sometimes fate inflicts a far severer penalty for a crime than justice would have meted out. Justice would not have demanded the life of the Army deserter, the man called Larry Marlin. But fate, in the form of a conspiracy by one who found out his crime, did take his life. So however harsh the penalty, it confirms the inevitability of that truth. Be sure your sins will find you out. And as for the man who took his life, it is next morning now, and in answer to a call from police headquarters a few minutes ago, Agent in Charge Phillips of the FBI's St. Louis office, accompanied by Special Agent Gaynor, have just entered the city morgue.
Here's the body right here, Mr. Phillips. We knew, of course, this couldn't be Jack Crawford.
No, that's not Crawford.
But since no identification was found on him, we thought we'd better check with you in case he just might be somebody else the FBI was interested in.
Glad you did.
Took a set of fingerprints for you. Here they are.
Thanks. Anything familiar about him to you, Gaynor?
No, I can't say that there is.
Look again, Gaynor. Forget there's a mustache on him.
Yes. Yes, there is something kind of familiar about that face, now that you mention it.
Lawrence Hampton.
Hampton?
He's an Army deserter. We took his photo out of the files just last week.
Oh, sure, I remember.
I'm certain it's he.
Well, the fingerprints will tell for sure.
Where was this body found, officer?
Way out near the edge of town. South side. Just before daylight.
There's a nasty gash on his head.
Yes. We thought at first he was a hit-and-run victim. But we checked some fragments of glass. We found the wound. They weren't from headlights.
What the...
They appear to be pieces from a whiskey bottle.
And this was deliberate murder.
I'd think so.
Any trace of the whiskey bottle near the body?
No, and we did a thorough search for it, too. It's my theory that the murder was committed somewhere else, and the body dumped there.
Where are his clothes?
We have them outside in the locker.
Gaynor.
Yes, sir?
Check them over. See what you can find.
Right.
I'm going to take these prints back to the office and make sure they're Hampton's.
You, babe?
Yeah.
I thought
thought you were working right through.
Well, I had to get a relief. I feel awful.
What's the matter?
Now, what do you think?
Look, forget that, will you?
Jack, how can I?
Nothing's going to happen, baby. When they find the body, they'll think he was hit by a car, that's all. Besides, he's a Lamister. The cops won't care how he got it.
That part of it don't bother me.
What are you feeling so bad about?
The way it happened. You're killing him like that.
Look, how many times do I have to tell you I did it in self-defense? Besides, it brought us together, didn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Anybody been asking for him?
Sure.
What'd you tell him?
Just like we made it up, that he went off on a bender this morning as soon as we hit the lot. Probably wound up in St. Louis.
That should cover it good.
Jack, let's get out of here.
Quit the show?
Yeah.
Look, honey, if you take a run out, you might as well put an ad in the paper that you've done the job.
I done it.
Sure. So take a pill for your nerves, kid, and go on back to work. Everything's going to turn out fine.
Can I come in, Mr. Phillips?
Yes, come ahead, Gaynor. How'd you make out?
I have plenty to report.
Good. Oh, by the way, the victim is definitely Hampton. I checked the prints.
And I checked his clothes.
What'd you find?
Well, nothing much until I got down to his shoes.
What about them?
Well, I examined the heels. Huh? And they were made of rubber, and stuck in the indentations were bits of what turned out to be popcorn, peanut shells, and sawdust.
That sounds like you've been to the circus. But there aren't any playing in St. Louis.
Now, there was a carnival playing quite near where Hampton was found. It closed last night.
I see.
Now, if the officer's theory was right, if Hampton was killed elsewhere and dumped on the highway, the murder might have been committed on or near the carnival grounds.
Yes.
And I'm checking to find out where the show moved to, and... Well, meanwhile, I wondered if I should cooperate with the local police and hop out and go over the grounds with them.
Good idea. Get on it right away. Phillips speaking.
This is Gaynor, Mr. Phillips.
Oh, where are you, Gaynor?
I just left the carnival grounds.
Any luck?
Yes, plenty. We found a number of blood-stained fragments of the bottle that was used in the murder.
That was a break.
I know. The neck of the bottle was intact, and there appears to be a good set of fingerprints on it.
Fine, fine.
And we found these fragments where the trailers had been parked, the trailers that the people in the show lived in.
I see. Well, that could localize the killing.
Yes. Now, has any report come in on where the show moved to?
Not yet. It shouldn't be hard to find.
Well, I'll bring the section of the bottle with the prints back with me.
Good. We can do a quick check in our files before sending them on to Washington.
Yes, sir. I'll be right over.
Gaynor.
Yes, sir?
Will you put those prints under the glass again, please?
Yes, sir.
There's something familiar about that one whorl. Hand me that stack of prints there.
Right.
I'm just going to play a hunch.
Here you are.
Now, let me see. That's identical. Those lines check. Little break there. It's the same Gaynor, the same prints. My hunch was right.
Well, who is it?
Our elusive friend, Jack Crawford.
Crawford?
Yes.
Really? Well, how did he and Hampton ever get together?
Now, that's what we have to find out. You say this bottle was found near where they parked the employees' trailers?
That's right.
There's a chance Crawford is somehow linked with that show.
Well, a report just came in. We know where they're playing now. It's only 50 miles from here.
I think we better get out there fast.
Who is it?
Let me in.
Come on.
What'd you have the door locked for?
I ain't looking for company. Thought you were going
to
keep working.
Oh, Jack, I had to quit. 1,000 pills wouldn't do me any good.
No,
I mean it. Every time a stranger had come up to the booth, I'd think it was a cop getting set to ask a few questions. I felt people standing in the crowds looking at me like they were watching my every move.
Hey, take it easy, will you? Will you take it easy?
I can't go on with this anymore. We got to get out of here, and right now.
What'll we use for dough?
I got Larry's money. Some he gave me toward the ring.
How far will that get us?
I don't care. We got to go, now.
Okay, babe. We do it your way. But how do we explain pulling out?
I'll say that I'm going to St. Louis to look for Larry.
That'll do, I guess.
You go get the car. It's parked in the lot.
Okay.
Stay where you are, Crawford.
Huh?
Don't try anything.
Jack, who's that?
We're special agents of the FBI. We want to talk to you both about the murder of Larry Hampton.
Jack Crawford was sentenced to a long term in the penitentiary for the murder of Larry Hampton. His female companion was also sent to prison for her part in the crime. Why do criminals go on defying the inevitability of that inexorable truth? Be sure your sins will find you out. Why do they go on making their futile challenges to the inescapability of justice? Why do they play a game they cannot possibly beat? It's not even a gamble, for a gamble presupposes a chance to win. But justice gives no odds. Justice is unbeatable.
Next week, another thrilling case from the files of your FBI. We'll tell you about it in just a moment. But now, let me refresh your memory on the more important features of the Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan. Remember that the mortgage interest is only 4%. Remember that one low monthly payment covers everything. Remember that if the owner dies, the widow owns the home without any mortgage at all. Yes, the Assured Home Ownership Plan is practically foreclosure proof. These are only a few of the advantages of the Assured Home Ownership Plan. To get the full story, talk to the Equitable Society representative in your community. Ask him for literature that gives you all details. Look in your local phone book for the name, the Equitable Life Assurance Society, EQUITABLE, the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Next week, we will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, The Fugitive Horse Player.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner, the author was Frank Ferries, and your narrator was Dean Carlin. This is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. And now this is Carl Frank speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Fugitive Horse Player. On This is Your FBI.
That's it for Case Closed this week. You can find more at RelicRadio.com. Got more from Nightbeat, This Is Your FBI, Case Closed, all the other shows, our Shoutcast stream, and if you'd like to help support it all, our donate button. Got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.